Hey, how you doing, Reggie? Good. Good, good, good. All right. Here we go again.
Here you come again.
Yeah, that's my Dolly Parton. All right. Are you ready to go, Reg? Good, good, good. Let's do this thing then. Put it in the books. Episode 442. And what do you say? We do a little three S's, a little countdown. I'll give you a little... you give me a little music, I'll give you a little podcast, and we'll get done and say nice job. Okay? That's the plan. All right, here we go. Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget, listening to the podcast is an important aspect of the entire Elton Jim podcast experience, but right up there, a close second, is getting out there and telling your friends, telling your family, tell anybody that you know who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. If you like what you hear, don't forget you can always go to WGNradio.com, go to the podcast section, go to the prompt for this podcast, and then hold on to your horses. Grab those reins, because, whoa, what you're going to encounter, podcast after podcast after podcast, woo, we've been doing this for more than 8 years. Now, they're all not in there. I don't know where some of them are, but there's plenty in there for you to get your background research done if you haven't been listening for that long, or if you have, go back and listen. It's always good to hear where we've been so you know where we're going. Right now we're going to episode number 442. Yes, sir. Well, last week I talked about the importance of voting, and at the time recorded that podcast before the election. It posted on the day before the election, and basically, based on all the information, which, once again, not sure what to believe anymore, which is part of what I want to talk about today. Every indication over the last several days, leading right up to and including the day of, or certainly the night before the election, was that this was going to be a razor thin, close election, one way or the other. And most people, if they had it breaking one way, had it breaking toward Vice President Kamala Harris, where apparently the momentum was shifting to her side. In fact, one of her campaign high-level campaign people predicted that she would win all seven. All seven swing states. Basically, he was predicting the landslide that did happen. So good for him. Except he predicted it to the wrong candidate. But all the polling, all the reports, all you were hearing was close election momentum on Kamala Harris's side, and it was anything but. And I said last week, we have no idea what we will be talking about next week, but you could bet we will be talking about it. And I say we, not just you and I, but we as a collective country, and perhaps as a collective world, and my gosh, are we talking about it. Because what happened was political history. There are some times when we do not know that we will be a part of history. And there are some times that we try to actually orchestrate that we become a part of history. That's happened just this past summer, just a few months ago. Many Sox fans, with the Sox being on the verge of losing a record 100-breaking 121st game to make them the worst, have the worst season in baseball history, many Sox fans went out to Guaranteed Rate Field in order to be a part of history. Even though it was a negative part of history, they still wanted to be a part of history. Well, of course, the Sox couldn't even do that right for their fans. And they lost the game on the road. And they won three games. And all the Sox fans went there. Didn't fill the park, but certainly had many more people than usual. And they couldn't even deliver there. But my point is, people wanted to be a part of history. But what I find is, many times you become a part of history when you don't expect to. And it's a good bet that, well, based on the reaction over the last week or so here, less than a week, but certainly almost, that most people were expecting to be a part of history, but not the part of history that turned out to be. Because don't forget, this presidential election that just passed on November 5th was chock full of possible history. Mainly, the election of Kamala Harris would have made history. The first woman president of the United States. Now, in the last several years, we have had that possibility, and it has not happened. As recently as 2016, just 8 years ago. But so there was history in the making. There was a potential for history. And it seemed more likely that that would be the historical milestone coming out of Tuesday's election. What people did not foresee, maybe a few did. If they did, they were very few and far between, and those people did not get much attention or publicity. And what did happen was, not only did Donald Trump win the election, which, in effect, became a part of history, because only one former president before Donald Trump was able to secure a second term after he had been out of office. Many presidents get two terms consecutively. But only one, Grover Cleveland, was able to do at that time something that no one had ever done, which was to win a second term after being out of office. And it seems like that would be a very difficult feat to accomplish, because if you had lost after one term, it would seem that people didn't like what you did. And so to come back and run again, the odds would be against you, which were the odds facing Donald Trump, certainly. But so not only did Donald Trump make history by becoming now the 45th president and now the 47th president-elect before inauguration in January. So that's history. But then he basically, and this is more of a subjective view, but it is being certainly framed as that, is perhaps one of the biggest, if not the biggest, political comeback in American history. Not only because of the fact that he won a second non-consecutive term, But given his polarizing presence in the political scene, given his track record of not only two impeachments in the past, but over the last couple of years, 91 charges against him brought to, against him, 34 indictments, a felony conviction of which he is waiting to be sentenced later this month. And yet, he won election. And not just by the razor-thin margin that so many had predicted, but a landslide. And that's all you can say about it. It was a landslide. Now, it wasn't a landslide in so much as a like Ronald Reagan or Richard Nixon in the past 50 or 60 years where they've won 49 of the 50 states. I mean, that's a landslide. But it was a landslide in that it aside from the expected states that are traditionally Democratic, not only did Donald Trump win the expected states, but won as the votes still continue to be counted. I don't know what's taking so long, but the majority, if not all, of the swing states, and the popular vote. So there is really no disputing. He performed better overall than he did in 2020, and accomplished what many would say was a huge, huge upset victory. Now that is not that is not the history that many were hoping for or expecting the day after the election last week. And we are still, as a country, in an interesting state of mind here. As we come up to the holidays, it's going to be an interesting holiday, I think, for a lot of families who may be divided, or maybe you're not divided. For those families who were all on one side or the other, if you were pro-Trump, it's going to be a very happy holiday season. If you were pro-Vice President Harris, I think there's going to be an interesting mood over your holidays. And there's an interesting mood still hovering over the country as the shock of this sets in. There are some people, especially Harris supporters, and many political pundits, and just everyday citizens who are shocked, who are depressed, who are angry, who feel just, they can't even describe the way they feel. Sick is some words that I've seen. And to be sure, it was a shocking development. I said last week on the podcast that this could go either way, that it wasn't going to be right in the middle. I said it's going to either be so thin that we're going to be counting votes for days and perhaps weeks, or it's going to be over by 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. It's going to be a landslide. And while it wasn't that, it didn't happen that fast, but it was certainly, the tide was turning early in the evening. And it was clear what was happening. And even until the official vote totals were in, it took a while, but it was decided. Donald Trump gave a victory speech, not that night per se. It was 2 or 3 in the morning, but it wasn't 3 days later, as many expected, if it was going to be so close. And most did not expect Donald Trump giving the victory speech. But we have witnessed history, whether you like it or not. Whatever side you are on, you can say that you witnessed history. Perhaps it was, as many we always say, it seems now in the last several years, this is the most important election in our lifetimes. Well, it seems like that's becoming a cliched phrase right now. And over the last several years, we've been hearing that all the time. And if you think about it, I'm sure they will be using that same tired cliche in 4 years, in 2028, because now we have a president that we know will have one term. And so there will be no clear-cut candidate, as it stands right now, as to who would be the presumptive nominees. While, yes, J.D. Vance is the vice president, and so he would certainly be considered. I don't think J.D. Vance is considered by many to be presidential timber. He's only 39 years old now. He'll be in his early 40s, and I don't think that he is going to be the standard bearer for the Trump or the MAGA movement or whatever you want to call it. We'll see, but I don't know if he has the heft. Because at the end of the day, he was being criticized as a vice presidential pick. And as we found once again, vice presidential picks really don't matter. People vote for the person at the top of the ticket. And unless there is some major, major problem, they will vote for the ticket in spite of the vice president. George Bush, the first George Bush, had Dan Quayle, was viewed as a neophyte and a joke. Didn't stop George Bush from winning. And Dan Quayle was not considered presidential timber, and he was not the nominee at, well, George Bush lost his re-election, but Dan Quayle never reemerged as any kind of presidential timber. I think that's going to be where J.D. Vance is. But because this Trump candidacy from the beginning has been centered around Donald Trump, not necessarily his policies, it's him. And so that's the question. Will the Trump movement have legs in 4 years? So my point is, we might be seeing history again. People are going to be saying that this could be the most important election of our lifetime. Well, why is that? Now in 4 years it'll be because the future of the country will be determined. The new generation will be in charge now. In 4 more years, Donald Trump will be gone. He will be 82 and he will have finished his second term. He will be finished. Mitch McConnell will be gone. Nancy Pelosi is already gone. They're not passed away, but in terms of being in power. So all the power brokers of the last 30 or 40 years will likely be gone. There will be a new presidential candidate on either side, on both sides. And so there will be a big shakeup. So I'm sure you're going to hear that. But in the aftermath of this shocking victory, and once again, you can't dispute that fact. It was a shocking victory. Not so much about, I mean, in theory, yeah. The fact, as I said, Donald Trump, a very controversial figure. We've never had a president who has a felony count against him. A former president impeached twice. I mean, Donald Trump comes certainly with a lot of baggage, more baggage than any former president ever, and then current nominee, a presidential candidate ever had. And he overcame all that to win. And as I said, not just win, but win convincingly. It was a landslide. At the very least, he ran the table. He had coattails too. The Senate added Republicans, As it stands now, they're still figuring out the House of Representatives, but there's no question that this could be termed a landslide at the very least, and a mandate. If you look at some of the statistical maps of what happened on election night, practically the whole country was red. It wasn't a red wave, it was a red tsunami. There was no blue wall. The blue wall is rubble. Complete rubble. So it's an odd time, and it was an unexpected time, but it was history. We have witnessed history. We didn't expect to, at least in the way it happened, but as I said many times, history is made not by expectation, but by what occurs. And that was historic. And whether you like him or not, Donald Trump will go down in history as one of the most powerful political figures. Pure and simple. There's no question about that. People will deny it. I mean, people that hate Trump will deny it. They won't admit it. But it won't matter. Because 100 years from now, what he has accomplished will be viewed without the baggage of the biases against him in the current time. And if you just look at what he will have predicted, what he has accomplished on paper, historians will be talking about it. Now, it'll be interesting to see how they talk about it. Nixon made history, too. Reagan made history, too, but there's still some people that don't believe Ronald Reagan was the greatest president in the last 50 years either. History is always debated, but there's no question that what Donald Trump achieved, whether you like it or not, was historic. Now, as we move forward here, I have to say that, and I've said this many times to you, I'm not a Trump fan. So I know in today's world, if you say anything that sounds even remotely positive about Donald Trump, you are immediately put into the Trump camp. Because if you don't hate him on his face, with just the mere mention of his name, if you don't have immediate hate for him, then you must be a fan. That's how deep the hatred for Donald Trump goes in some circles. I don't subscribe to that. As I said, I'm not a Trump fan, but I'm also not a fan of what I feel is a real disservice to the people. And so I'm not promoting Trump. I'm not supporting Trump. What I'm doing is what I often do. I take a step back and I look at things as objectively as I can. And people say, but if you even can be objective about Donald Trump, that means that you're still in his camp. No, that's not the case. I understand what Donald Trump is. But what I have also witnessed over the last 8 years since he became a force on the political scene has been very disturbing to me. For some people, Donald Trump is disturbing. And there are times when he has done things that are disturbing to me as well. But it doesn't also forgive or wipe away the sins of and the acts of what other people have done as well against him. As I've said to you on many occasions when I've talked about this, whether it was COVID or the elections, I am a registered Democrat. I am pro-choice in terms of abortion. I am a liberal-minded person. I'm not a far-left progressive, which has sadly overcome much of the Democratic Party, and I think has attributed to what happened last week, as the far left and some very radical ideas that were allowed to get administered have hurt people and hurt this country in many ways. And a lot of people went to the ballot box and said, we don't like this. And so there was kind of a protest vote, not just in favor of Donald Trump, but there was a protest vote about the way the country was going. You saw different polls that said 70% of the people did not feel the country was on the right track. And what I find interesting is that when that polling question and that number attached to it, 70% felt that the country was on the wrong track, most interpreted that meaning either policies, you know, Biden, the Biden administration, the Biden policies in terms of the economy with what was going on with inflation or with immigration and things like that. And that certainly is a part of it. But I also do believe that there was also a revolt in many ways about some of the policies that have taken over many of our governments and that have had adverse effects on people's lives. Certainly in the way of the defund the police or to get rid of police, we have seen crime rise around the country, certainly in big cities, as in an overreaction to the George Floyd murder, which was a horrific event, and which should have been and was punished, and which should have been deplored and made sure that something like that never happened again. However, as what we do in this country so often, when there is a wrong, and when there is a wrong that is heinous as that was, we tend to then overreact in an equally heinous way. An overreaction, overcorrection. And we've been in the middle of that now for 4 years of this overcorrection with very far left policies being implemented and being catastrophic in many ways. Certainly in the crime area. We've seen identity politics become something that was the norm, with people not being voted into office for who they were, but rather for what they were, based on their gender or their race or their sexual orientation. Doesn't matter about qualifications or experience or a track record for delivering results. People were just ticking off boxes. And people without any experience, without any qualifications, except that they ticked many of those boxes that were suddenly viewed as important to appease and somehow correct the George Floyd incident, have gotten us into a lot of trouble. And we've seen many of the major cities in this country become almost unlivable. San Francisco just repealed many of the lenient propositions that were instituted 4 years ago because the city is filled with so much crime and drug use and homelessness because of lenient types of laws that were meant to soften criminalization, soften laws against drug use. And so there was a big protest vote this past week. But that's not really one I want to talk about, but I just thought I would throw it in there, is that we're starting to see a correction here again on the other side. Now, my hope is that we will do something in moderation. We rarely do anything in moderation, but I hope that if we're going to start to correct things a little, let's not go hog wild on the other side again. We tend to go to extremes whenever we try to solve a problem. If there's something terrible that happens, then our solution goes way on the other side to overcorrect it, instead of perhaps going somewhere in the middle. So hopefully that's what happens. But I guess what I wanted to talk about today, there are a lot of people, now more than half of the people, I mean, Donald Trump won the popular vote. More than half the people in this country are not unhappy with what happened. But the ones who are unhappy are very vocal about it. And they've been very vocal about their distaste for Donald Trump in the last 8 years. And so this isn't just a political loss. For many people, this is a gut punch. This is a reassessment of lives. This is a, how do I go on from here? I think that's an exaggeration. Donald Trump was president for 4 years. The sky didn't fall. Our democracy is not threatened. I don't know. Did we have elections in the 4 years that Donald Trump was here? Yes. Oh, I know Donald Trump. Believe me, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump's. I'm not appeasing him, but I'm trying to get some reality into this situation, because some people are catatonic, are suicidal over this. And I'm trying to provide some comfort here, which is not just to say, I know, isn't it terrible? Let's all wallow in our own sorrow, because that's not the way to move forward. What I think we need to do is start to at least say, okay, I understand your disappointment. Even more than that, I understand you're incredulous. You can't believe this. But the world is not coming to an end. This country is not coming to an end. Our institutions in this country are not coming to an end. There may be some policies that you don't agree with. He may say some things that you don't like. He may say things that are brash and inappropriate. I get it. But most of Donald Trump is bluster. Most of Donald Trump, of the outrageous things he said, are said for the sake of shock value, and they go away. I'm seeing these things. This, you know, he said it's going to be mass deportations. He said that 8 years ago. There was no great mass deportation 8 years ago. I didn't see Donald Trump lining up buses in every state around the country and busing people out of this country like he said he was going to do. You need to hit the brakes here. But here's the thing. If you're upset, and I appreciate you being upset. As I said, I have felt, like, I think I've even mentioned this, while I am a registered Democrat and I am a liberal-minded person and I am pro-choice and I check all those boxes that we talk about, but I have felt like a man or a person without a party over the last several years. Because while I don't subscribe to Donald Trump's philosophies, I don't also subscribe, because they are so extreme to one side, I don't subscribe to the far left because those are so extreme. And what I think we saw was that the other day there was a vote for moderation, for the middle, for not all these extremes. Finally, perhaps, people are saying, can we just agree to be in the middle? We are seeing so many things in black and white. And human nature and society is always gray. And I think that's what the vote represented. This wasn't a vote for racism. This wasn't a vote for fascism, as many people were saying. This wasn't a vote for Nazism or for a monarchy. That's not what the vote represented. I think in many ways where you see in so many states, even Democratic states, people are saying, whoa, we've got to come back a little to the middle here. Illinois, where I live, Illinois, a blue state, no question. Democratic mayor, Democratic governor. Illinois used to be a Republican state for decades, but over the last, since Barack Obama especially, Illinois has become a blue state. But it wasn't, and as blue state if it is, don't forget, the Democratic convention was in Chicago. You can't find, right? I mean, they're not going to put their convention in a state that is not friendly territory. The Democratic Presidential National Convention was in Chicago, in Illinois. And you know what? Well, Kamala Harris won the state. She won it 51-47%. Not a landslide. And in fact, in Chicago, Donald Trump, a Republican, which Chicago is a bastion of Democratic politics. Everybody in Chicago is a Democrat for the most part. Whether they are or not, they are. There's the Republican Party has very little power in this city, in the Cook County. And Donald Trump actually won one of the Chicago wards. Unheard of. A Republican winning a Chicago ward? And in fact, in about five or six, I can't remember the number, he didn't win, but he got more than 40% or close to 40%. And I believe that that was a protest vote by many people about the rise in crime that has happened in this country over the last 4 years. And many other things. As I said, we've got high inflation, and Chicago was a sanctuary city and was overrun with migrants that were sent from the South. And it became a major problem in many wards in this city. So even though within a blue state and within a Democrat, a defining Democratic city and county, there was still impressive vote totals for a Republican, which is unheard of. So you've got to pay attention to that. There's got to be a reason for that. But if you're distraught, if you're emotionally unhinged, if you're angry, if you're not even angry, if there's anger, if there's if you're just in a funk, if you're you don't know what to do next, I get it. I understand it. Donald Trump is a polarizing character. There's no question about that. And people can't even believe what happened. They are still in shock. But you have to move forward. This too shall pass. But if you really are looking for blame, and that's what everybody's doing now on the Democratic side, there is great sorrow, there is great anger, there is great shock, there is great depression. And with that becomes a lot of finger pointing and blame. And so how did this happen? In the post-mortem, whenever there's a tragedy, there is initial knee-jerk reactions and blame. And so that's happening now. I mean, literally, many Democrats, if not all Democrats, are going through the five stages of grief. And that's understandable. This was a very polarizing and passionate election. Two very different opinions on the future. But we are in a democracy. You can't say that you voted against Trump because he was a threat to democracy. And then when democracy plays out, when you don't agree with it, then you don't like democracy. You can't have it both ways. But if you're looking for blame, there's enough blame to go around. There's a lot of blood on a lot of hands. I've been preaching this for a while, and it really came to fruition in this election. I've been screaming it for 8 years. But this election, I believe, has shown at least two major institutions that have failed the people. And this has not just happened over the last couple of years or the last couple of months. This has been going on for at least 8 years. When Donald Trump arose, when he came down that escalator to Trump Tower in June of 2015. I've talked about this a little, but I really think now it's worth re-examining, because I believe the results of the election were a result of what happened over the last 8 years or so. What happened on November 5th is a result of not just the last two, three months, not over the last 3 or 4 years of the Biden administration. This has been going on for quite a while. And there needs to be a lot of self-examination here, and introspection, and learning from mistakes. There needs to be some lesson learning, some real honest looks in the deep, dark, truthful mirror. And the two institutions that I'm talking about, if you're upset of what happened in the election on November 5th, don't be mad at Kamala Harris. Don't be mad at Joe Biden. Don't be mad at Donald Trump. What you should be mad at is the Democratic Party. And what you should be mad at is the national legacy established media. Now, that's not easy for me to say, because I'm a Democrat. And for the majority of my career, several decades, I have been a part of the media. So I'm not happy about criticizing either one. But if you've listened to me with any regularity, you know that I like to be in reality. I take a step back. I do. I praise those things that I love, but I also criticize those things that I love because I believe that we're all flawed and everything has flaws. And the best way to find an answer is to be honest enough to identify a problem, as difficult as that may be, and then get the solution. And I've said this many times. You go to a doctor, they can't cure your illness unless they diagnose the problem, until they identify the problem. And sometimes it's not the news we want to hear. Sometimes you get your blood test back and everything's clear and you go, no problem. And then you take those same blood tests and sometimes there is a problem and we don't want to hear the bad news. But we have to face the bad news in order to get to the good part of it. In order to get rid of the problem, you've got to face the bad news because that's the only way you could best treat it and solve it and get past it. And that's not easy. I get it. But that's the only way to do it. You can't deny it. It'll only get worse. And that's what's happened over the last several years. Don't blame Donald Trump. Don't blame Donald Trump supporters. Don't blame Joe Biden. Don't blame Kamala Harris. Blame the Democratic Party, and blame the national media, specifically the political media, the news media, because they failed the people over the last 8 years. They certainly failed the Democratic Party. They failed the people that would identify themselves as Democrats, and overall, the media failed to do its job for this nation. So if you're mad that Donald Trump became president the first time in 2016 and now came back in 2024 and became president, you should blame the Democratic Party for that. And you should blame the national media for that in great part. There's other people to blame, but I would say those two entities played a major role. Now, I'm not saying that there was some great conspiracy between these two. There wasn't some coordinated effort. But individually, they failed to do their jobs. And because they had a common enemy, while this was not a, I don't think, was a contrived conspiracy between the two, but it was a subtle alliance, is what I would say. It was a subtle support of each side. Because at the end of the day, in their minds, they had a common enemy, a common goal. And in many ways, it was retribution and revenge, which is interesting. Because that's what they accused Donald Trump of doing, of having retribution and revenge against his enemies. But over the last 8 years, that's what they've been doing. Donald Trump was viewed as a joke in 2015. And because he was treated that way by the media, as not a serious candidate at all, but a blustery real estate magnate who became a quasi-celebrity and then became a reality star on television, of which, I should say, the media did create Donald Trump. No question about that. The New York media created Donald Trump going back to the 80s. They made him. They made him a celebrity. They made him a person of note. And when he wanted to enter politics, he was viewed as a joke. not only by the political world, the Democrats who would be running against him, but the media as well. He looked like he was a buffoon. He was a he was an attention grabber, and this was just another stunt to get his name into the headlines for a while. He was a narcissist, and he needed attention, and he decided to go into politics. Where else would you go if you were a narcissist looking for attention? That's the breeding ground. Politics is the breeding ground for narcissists and people that need attention. That's who goes there. That's who thrives there. So was it any surprise that Donald Trump went that way? Shouldn't have been. But a man who never ran for office in his life, for any office, to stage a campaign for not an alderman, not a senator, but the highest and most powerful position in the world, was viewed as folly. And the Democratic Party didn't take him seriously, and the media didn't take him seriously. Until his message began to resonate with people. And suddenly, the Democratic Party and the national media had to deal with Donald Trump. And not just a jokey wink kind of way, like, but wait a minute. This guy's picking up steam. This isn't a joke anymore. We thought this was a joke. And Donald Trump made people upset in political circles and in the media. Because the media said, how dare you have the audacity to run for president? And how dare people actually give you support? Because we created you. You're a buffoon. You are our creation. You are our little favorite little pastime. You are our newspaper filler, or our last minute filler on the news as a joke. No one's supposed to take you seriously as a political candidate, if you're the Democratic Party, or as a presidential hopeful that the media would have to cover in a serious way, as it became very clear that Donald Trump was a political force. And so, well, I don't believe that the national media in this country and the Democratic Party colluded. I don't believe they sat in a back room somewhere and said, how do we destroy Donald Trump? But Donald Trump threatened both of them. Because in their minds, this is our world. This is our game. The Democratic Party's like, no, you don't just get to be a part of the political system. There's rules here. And we decide who is in or who isn't. And the media says, we created you, so we can dispose of you at our whim. But that wasn't the case. And Donald Trump quickly circumvented the media. He used social media, the same entity that destroyed the influence of legacy media, newspapers, radio, and television. He was the first political candidate to say, why am I worried about interviews with the Washington Post or with the New York Times? They're not doing me any favors. They're attacking me. And I've got these social media platforms here, which people... this is where most people get their news anyway. I'm just going to use them. And the media was insulted at the fact that Donald Trump circumvented them. They used to be the main conduit between candidates and the public. And suddenly Donald Trump said, you guys, I don't need you. I'll go right to the people. I don't need you to filter what I said. I don't need you to interpret what I said. I don't need you to misinterpret what I said. I don't need you to deliberately misstate what I said. I'll go right to the people through these new direct platforms. And that made the established media mad. And that made him public enemy number one to the media. And as he gained steam in the political world, he was angering politicians, saying, wait, this is our little world. We know all our players. You're an outsider. You don't belong here. And they targeted him to get him out, because what they were seeing, especially the Democratic Party, what they were seeing was he was gaining traction. And they still didn't take his candidacy seriously. The day before the election with Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, as I said, you talk about polls here and things, and how this last election wasn't supposed to, was supposed to go toward Harris. There was talk in 2016, on the night before the election, that Hillary Clinton could possibly win 40 states. This could be, like, once again, Ronald Reagan-like landslide. That's how much this was going to be a landslide for Hillary Clinton. And when Donald Trump won in 2016, it was very similar today. But now that so many, 8 years later, that so many more people are attuned to social media, it's even taken on more of a tragedy for many people. But the problem that the Democratic Party did, and the problem that the media did, was they were so mad that this interloper, that this outsider, that this person that they considered a sideshow act, had the audacity to enter the political world and run for president, and had the audacity to circumvent the media in his campaign to do so, that both of them independently targeted him. And those are two very powerful entities. And so, like I said, I don't believe that they colluded or had some great conspiracy, but they each had an axe to grind. And there was an unspoken alliance between the two. And why I blame the Democratic Party is, on the day after Trump's inauguration in 2017, the Democratic Party should have healed its wounds, looked forward, and said, okay, this was an aberration, perhaps this was a fluke, but it happened. We have to accept it. But let's show him how we play the game, because he's a political neophyte and we aren't. But the media and the Democratic Party were so intent on destroying Trump personally that they kept their eyes off the prize. And the prize was the next election in 2020. And so their goal was to diminish and to embarrass and to hopefully either find a way for him to resign or kick him out of the presidency. This was personal because he, in their minds, infringed on their power base and won. And they weren't happy about it. So the Democratic Party, instead of saying, what we have to do now in the next 4 years is find a candidate to rally around that candidate, man or woman, and have that person unofficially already beginning to run against Donald Trump, reacting to what Donald Trump does as president, and to get out there and start to connect with the people and to put forth ideas and policies and to show an alternative to the way Donald Trump was running the country. And maybe three or four people would have initially come out and put themselves in front of the public over the last those 4 years. And then we decide, like we do in primaries, we decide who the people are reacting to, who has support, who is inspirational, who is aspirational, who might be a good leader. So by the time that the primaries came in early 2020, there would have been no question as to who the nominee was. And this person would have been able to coalesce support amongst the Democratic Party to have been a viable candidate to beat Trump, as well as a real candidate who could not just beat Trump, but also be an effective president. But they got so obsessed with Donald Trump that their only goal was to beat Trump in any way possible, to degrade Trump in any way possible, to embarrass Trump any way possible. He became their obsession. And that's where they made their mistake, both the media and the Democratic Party. Democratic Party should have licked its wounds and then said, how do we move forward? Let's find our next leader and let's wipe the table with Donald Trump in 2020. But instead, they focused on him. There was hyperbole with every tweet he put out. The media, every day, the media was the sky was falling. Donald Trump said this. Donald Trump said that. It was nothing. Impeaching Donald Trump twice. Talking about the 25th Amendment, talking about his mental stability, anything that they were trying to attack him in every way, attacking his businesses, his family, you name it. They stopped at nothing. Instead of doing what they're supposed to do, was field candidates, nurture candidates, support candidates, and get candidates elected who could beat him, as well as be good leaders for the country. Not just beat him, that's part of it, but also be an effective president so that you can continue the presidency into the next term. But they were so singular on embarrassing Donald Trump that by the time the first primaries came, they had 20 possible people in the first debates in late 1919. This is before COVID. 20 possible candidates, one of which was Kamala Harris, one of which was Joe Biden. And after the first debate, it was clear that not one of those 20 were ready to A, be president, and B, could never beat Donald Trump. Their views were way too extreme. They didn't have the resume. They weren't able to articulate. They didn't have charisma. They didn't have it. In fact, the first person to drop out before the primaries even started in 2020, ironically, was Kamala Harris. First person to drop out of the Democratic hopefuls. Never ran in a primary. Dropped out in about November. Had less than 1% of the support. And a year later, she was vice president. Figure that out. In fact, Joe Biden was on the verge, now his third run for president, in his 40-year career, at age 78, 77, whatever he was, he was on the verge of dropping out yet again within the first two or three primaries in 2020 because Bernie Sanders, with a far-left view, was gaining traction. And that scared the heck out of the Democrats because they knew that, Bernie Sanders' views would never cut it in mid-America. And he could never beat Donald Trump. He threatened Hillary Clinton's candidacy 4 years before. So now he had a name. Now he had some following. And in the midst of all these neophytes, he was the only name brand. So while his ideas were very off the charts, there was no one else even close to having any gravitas. Don't forget, Joe Biden, yeah. Joe Biden was the vice president for Barack Obama for 8 years. And when Barack Obama's term was up, he did not anoint Joe Biden as his successor. He anointed Hillary Clinton. If Joe Biden was such a great president, such great presidential timber, then why wouldn't he have automatically been next in line after Barack Obama's two terms? He was the natural heir apparent. After Bill Clinton had his two terms, who was the next nominee? Al Gore. After Ronald Reagan's two terms, who became the next president? His vice president. George Bush. Why wasn't Joe Biden considered presidential, the heir apparent and the best presidential candidate after serving 8 years with Barack Obama when he was younger, 8 years younger, or no, what, 4 years younger? Why wasn't he? He was bypassed. If he was such a great candidate, such a great leader, doesn't make any sense. But the Democrats wasted 3.5 years picking and trying to destroy Donald Trump instead of keeping their eye on the prize and beating him at the ballot box with a real, real candidate who would not only beat him, but also be a president who could steer the country for the next 8 years. So they were so desperate after they saw they could not have Bernie Sanders be the nominee. He's an admitted socialist. There's no way. So what did they do? Because these other people were so unqualified and unready for the job, they went to Joe Biden, who was a well-known entity, older guy, and they said, you know, while he certainly has left leanings, far left leanings, they're like, you know what, we can steer him. He's the easiest of all these other screwballs here who are trying to run to push to a centrist kind of an image, and we can beat Donald Trump with that because Donald Trump is so extreme. And then COVID came in. But Joe Biden was, given his age, it's all he wanted to be was president. So this was an amazing offer. But I believe that the offer was to Joe Biden, and he said it at when he was running. I'm a transitional candidate. For most people, what that meant was I'm only here for 4 years to beat Trump. I'm an older guy. I can get this country back on track, but I'm not here for 8 years. I'm here for one term just to beat Trump and to undo what he's done to our country. And then I'll pass the torch to a new generation. That's what he said. And that was the plan. Except Joe Biden started to like being president. And he didn't want to give up after 4 years. And if there was some little secret plan that power brokers like Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer or Barack Obama may have said, well, look, Joe, here's the deal. Your campaign is ready to die. He was ready to drop out of the primaries by the third or fourth one. He would have been the second or third person out. That's the irony, was that the two people that were dropping out of the campaign, out of the primaries early on, wound up being the ticket. That's how hard up they were. That's how much the Democratic Party didn't do its job by finding and nurturing and establishing a candidate over the last 3 years before that to run a real campaign against Trump and then also be a very competent leader instead of an old man who even at that time was showing signs of mental decline, which is where the media comes in about letting the people down. So, Joe Biden casts himself as a centrist. All the far-left progressives of the party are told to keep their mouths shut for 6 months. The OACs and all the other ones, because you're scaring middle America with your crazy ideas. Let's get Joe in there, and then he'll execute your agenda. He'll execute the Bernie Sanders far-left agenda, but Bernie Sanders can't be the guy. Because he can't get elected. So we're going to beat Trump, and don't worry. We'll get your progressive agenda in there. It's just going to be Joe that's going to do it. But keep your mouth shut for 6 months. Don't start spouting all these wild ideas, these defund the police ideas. Don't start talking about that stuff because you're going to scare middle America. Let's beat Trump. Joe can do it. And then COVID came, and the fears of COVID was enough to tip the scales in a very close election. And Joe Biden was the good soldier for a while. First day, he undid all or many of Trump's policies, which led to the opening of the border, which led to an unneeded problem that wound up derailing his presidency and then Kamala Harris's candidacy. Immigration was a huge, huge issue and concern for people in this election, whether people want to admit it or not. It was basically an open border. But that was the policies that they, anything that had Trump's name on it, were automatically changed because he was the devil, he was the enemy. Instead of saying, well, can we just take a deep breath and maybe examine some of these things? Once again, all extremes. First day, there was 90 things that Joe Biden signed because he needed to send a message to the far left that don't worry, I'm your guy. And don't worry, we've got Kamala Harris here, who's an African-American woman, and I'm gonna quit after 4 years, and I'll hand the torch to her, and we'll have our first female president be an African-American female president, and we'll make history. And that was the plan. I guarantee you that was the plan by the power brokers in the party. But then Joe, after being president for 2 or 3 years and him feeling like, you know what, I'm doing a good job. Hey, I passed this infrastructure deal here, which no one else could do. And I'm kind of liking being president. I always wanted to be president. And you know what? I'm not giving up the job. And this little deal that I know was made, I don't have any concrete, but it just seemed too perfect. If you see the way I laid it out, I think Joe reneged. And of course, the powers that be, well, they couldn't say, well, wait a minute, we had a deal, Joe. Because that couldn't come out. So they had to keep their mouths shut. And Joe, I think, was going against the deal. I want to be president again. I could be president again. And then what else did the Democrats do? In the midst of that, after January 6th and that horrendous event at the Capitol, Donald Trump was poisoned. Donald Trump was a pariah. Donald Trump was toxic. Republicans ran away from him. Democrats had a big, I told you so. Donald Trump's political career was over after January 6th. He was politically dead. And what did the Democrats do? The hatred for Donald Trump was so deep, even though they beat him in the election, they got rid of him, they made proof of the fact that what they asserted, that his election was a fluke and his own actions made him a pariah and basically killed his support and his political career. He was gone. He was in Siberia. He was in political Siberia. He was gone. He was banished. But that wasn't enough for the vengeful Democrats and the Democratic Party. They just didn't want to beat Trump. They wanted to annihilate Trump. They wanted to humiliate Trump. They wanted to destroy Trump. They wanted to put Trump in jail. They already beat him. He was gone. He was out of the mainstream. It was done. But that wasn't enough. And so they brought up the several court cases against him. And what they did was resurrect his career and his viability because he was able to make himself a victim. And he was able to drum up the support of those people that still supported him. They still supported him, but they couldn't because the January 6th events were so horrendous that nobody could justify that. But when Donald Trump now became a victim as opposed to the protagonist, they were able to now come back to him. And the Democrats were the ones who re-energized his base. Don't forget, he got 75 million votes. Even though he lost in 2020, he had 75 million votes. He didn't even get 75 million votes this time. Got 72 or 73. And he won. He got 75 million and lost. But 75 million votes is a lot of votes. And they resuscitated and resurrected and re-energized his base. And they, by those court cases, they made Donald Trump, or gave him the ability to become a victim and to get sympathy from those who supported him, and they resurrected his career. And suddenly he became a viable candidate. And even though many Republicans on January 7th, 2021, had horrible things to say about Donald Trump and distanced himself from him, hey, politicians, they have zero integrity. And they all came back when they saw that Donald Trump had a movement happening again, who had some support. Then suddenly, whatever they said in 2021 was forgotten. And now Donald Trump was the greatest chance they had to beat Joe Biden. That not only did the Democrats, between 2016 and 2020, keep their eye off the ball, and instead of finding and promoting and nominating a viable young candidate for the future, because they were so intent on just destroying Donald Trump and not doing their job, they wound up having to come to with a compromise candidate, not a consensus candidate. All Joe Biden won was that he wasn't Donald Trump. That's the only reason he won. He didn't win for any other reason. And that is not the way you elect a president. The job is too important. Joe Biden had run for president before. He never made it through the primaries. He was the vice president and never was anointed as the next guy. But suddenly he was the only person in the world who could beat Donald Trump because the Democrats didn't do their job for 3 years. They tried to attack him and impeach him and everything else instead of doing their job, finding a candidate, finding somebody who could beat him not only at the ballot box, but become a viable presidential candidate and future president for the next 8 years and then pass it on to his successor. They failed the people. And they failed them again. Because then now they had Joe Biden, who says, whose mental capacities are obviously falling. And here's where the media comes in. The media has such a hate for Trump. They're attacking him for during his presidency every day. The sky was falling. When he was gone, they didn't pay attention to him. But then when these indictments came, what did they do? They put him on the news again. They made Donald Trump again. They gave him free publicity. And they allowed him to present himself as the victim. They helped him again. They also resuscitated his popularity and his political power by putting him on television because they hate him so much, but they figured, come on, the guy's going to go to jail. There's no way that anything would be positive about this because they don't understand that Donald Trump is an anomaly. Donald Trump was running against a woman in 2016 and made disparaging remarks about grabbing women by their genitals. Right before the election, and he still won. He still beat the woman. Doesn't that tell you something? This guy, the rules don't apply to him. But the Democratic Party and the media were still playing by these old rules. Oh, well, he's finished now. 2 weeks ago. Oh, well, there was a Puerto Rican joke at this rally at Madison Square Garden. It's over. Well, it was so over that Donald Trump dominated Latino votes. Nobody cared about a joke. Yeah, 20 years ago, that joke would have been. Donald Trump is a different candidate. And the media never gets it, and the Democratic Party never got it. And that's why what happened last week happened. And not only was the media helping to resuscitate Trump, but we all know now, after seeing that performance in the June debate with Donald Trump, that Joe Biden has been seriously declining mentally. In fact, when he became president, he was already in decline. And physical decline, falling downstairs, not doing press conferences, walking the wrong way, and it's only getting worse. And the media would never play it down. And the media helped the Democratic Party by saying Joe is sharp as a tack, including his vice president. And that was a problem with her candidacy. You didn't see this? We saw it. You're with him every day. We saw him one time and we saw what happened. And the media was not showing Joe Biden tripping downstairs or looking dazed when he's at an event walking away from the stage. They edited those out. You never saw that. They weren't doing it in collusion with the Democratic Party, but they had their own axe to grind against Trump. So they had to show a vibrant Joe Biden, which was completely fraudulent. And we know that now. And the media played a major role in that. There's lessons to be learned here. The Democratic Party has to stop focusing on Trump and needs to focus on why Trump won, because he listened to the people. Democratic Party, by also staging a coup then, since Joe wouldn't leave, they basically kicked him out. It was Shakespearean. They circumvented democracy. Joe Biden won 15 million primary votes, and those votes didn't count. Because Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama and Chuck Schumer and other people most likely pressured him to get out. So who was the threat to democracy? Donald Trump may have been a threat to democracy the way you were talking, but who was the real threat? Who circumvented democracy? The Democratic Party. Because they first put Joe Biden in there. He never should have been the nominee. There should have been another nominee 4 years before who could have run against Trump. But they were too focused on embarrassing Trump than finding their own candidate. And then they were left with nobody, and then they had to go with a weak old man who had some name recognition. And then that weak old man didn't want to give up. He didn't want to go by the plan. So what did they do? They forced him out, and they put in his vice president, who was nondescript for 3.5 years. A year and a half before, when Joe Biden was thinking about running for re-election, there was talk that they would replace Kamala Harris as his vice presidential running mate. And then ultimately she now became the nominee. How did that happen? This was backroom stuff, folks. And the media then coronated Kamala Harris, didn't vet her, didn't ask her any hard questions, edited interviews so that her answers wouldn't sound as bad. It wasn't a conspiracy per se, but it was. All because they hated Donald Trump. Donald Trump circumvented the media, demonized the media, and Donald Trump beat the Democratic Party at their own game. And they hated him for it, and they just didn't want to beat him. They wanted to annihilate him. And in that obsession with him, that's why what happened last week happened. Don't blame Kamala Harris. Don't blame Joe Biden. Don't blame Donald Trump. Don't blame the people that voted for Donald Trump. Blame the Democratic Party, who let the people down, who didn't do their job, who got obsessed with Donald Trump as opposed to finding a viable candidate to beat him in 2020, who could have been a president, not a placeholder. Somebody that you could have voted for because you wanted to, not because you didn't want to vote for Trump. That's the only reason people voted for Joe Biden. And that wasn't enough this time around. The anything but Trump thing didn't hold water. Because you had a failed presidency with inflation and wars around the world and immigration. When Joe Biden was elected, I told my wife, I said, write it down. Joe Biden is a one-term president, and he's going to go down in history like Jimmy Carter, who was a horrible president. Great guy, don't get me wrong. Did some great things after his presidency, but he was a failed president because he was a reaction president. He was elected as a reaction to Watergate and the Republicans. People didn't vote necessarily for Carter. They voted against the Republicans and Nixon and Ford. And Joe Biden didn't win because he was some great hope for the country. He was the only hope to possibly beat Donald Trump. And that doesn't work. You cannot run an anti-candidate for the most important job in the world. And that's what Democrats have done these last two elections. And that's what happened. And the media helped that cause, because they hated Donald Trump too, for demonizing them, for circumventing them, and for having the audacity to use them. They wanted to be the puppet masters. We created you. We'll tell you what you can do. And Donald Trump said, no, I'm doing what I want to do. And that made journalists angry, and they attacked him, and they enabled Joe Biden, and they enabled Kamala Harris. Both the media and the Democratic Party hopefully will learn some lessons moving forward. The Democratic Party now has 4 years. Let's see what happens. That's why I'm telling you this now. This is what you need to look for, folks, in the next 4 years. Is the Democratic Party, is the media going to continue the same day-to-day petty attacks on Trump? Or is the Democratic Party going to focus on its future and start to nurture and find its next candidate and already start running against Trump in January? Because that's what should happen. If you see the media still blowing up and over-exaggerating and gloom and dooming every minute of the day about Trump, if you see people in the Democratic Party, the leaders, complaining about Trump, trying to impeach him, all this other BS, you realize they haven't learned a lesson. There needs to be some serious soul searching in the media and in the Democratic Party of what they have done in the last 8 years. The media needs to start reporting and stop advocating. The media is supposed to report. I'm not supposed to hear what Jake Tapper thinks. I'm not supposed to hear what George Stephanopoulos thinks. They're supposed to report the news. They're anchor people. They're not supposed to become the news. They're supposed to report the news. The Democratic Party is not trying to destroy Donald Trump. He's a lame duck president. This is my point. He can't run again. We know he has the job. It's going to be done in 4 years. So focus on the prize. The prize is 2028, Democrats, not Donald Trump. But I don't think they can do it. I think they are so obsessed, both the media and the Democratic Party, they're going to fail again. And ultimately, they are letting the people down. The Democratic Party let the people down of this country because they did not field viable candidates to beat Donald Trump. That is what they did wrong. They didn't do their job. That's their job, to nurture and field viable people to run this country. And they did not do that. Joe Biden was not a viable candidate and president. And that was proven. Kamala Harris was not a viable candidate. They didn't do their job. Now they've got 4 years to admit to that, to stop pointing fingers, and to get focused on 2028. And it needs to start the day after, the minute after the inauguration. The whole current power structure of the Democratic Party needs to go away. They are of a different era. Pelosi, Schumer, Obama, it's done. They couldn't pull this off. This was a palace coup that they orchestrated, and it failed miserably. They only exalted Donald Trump as opposed to embarrassing him. They all need to go away. The Democratic Party needs to find new, young, inspired leaders and possible candidates. And they've got 4 years to do it. Forget Donald Trump. He won. He's in there. He'll be gone. The media needs to cover Donald Trump. Yes. But it's over. He beat you. By denigrating him and trying to destroy him, you can't do it. You tried for 8 years and he came back and bit you in the butt. He beat you. So move on and gain back your integrity and your journalistic morals again and do your job. Report, don't advocate. So if you're having problems dealing with what happened, move forward. Look forward. Force the Democratic Party, if you're a Democrat, to look forward. Don't obsess on Donald Trump. He won. It's over and he'll be gone in 4 years. Focus on the future. Focus on the new Democratic leadership. Focus on the new leaders in the party who could lead this country into the way you want it to be. Look how fast the last 4 years went by. 4 years sounds like a long time. It goes by quick, folks. The Democratic Party and the media failed to do their jobs over the last 8 years. They are the most to blame for what happened last week. So if you're mad, and if you're distraught, and if you're depressed, Those are the two entities that you need to be upset at. And at the same time, you need to get through that and hopefully force the party and force the media by not watching them, by not giving them credence, and they'll learn their lesson. I'll make a prediction right now. I don't think Jimmy Kimmel and Steve Colbert are going to be hosting their Late Night shows after the next 4 years, because their careers are based on hating Trump. Trump beat them. If the only reason that Steve Colbert kept his job is because he became Donald Trump's critic. Because Donald Trump looked like a fluke. Donald Trump cannot be viewed as a joke anymore, or as a fluke. He's validated himself, whether you hate him or not. That's the truth. He came back and won decisively. So you have to accept it. You don't have to like it. You don't have to admire it, but you have to accept it. As hard as it is. But Donald Trump can't be viewed as a fluke or a carnival barker anymore. More than half of this country voted him in. So if you want to be able to get rid of your depression and your anger, get involved with your Democratic Party and make sure that they are moving and doing what they should be doing, which is listening to the people of this country, which they haven't. They've been lecturing the people of this country. They have been denouncing the people of this country instead of listening to the people of this country. And that's why Donald Trump won. Whether you like him or not, he gave people a reason to vote for him, despite all the baggage, despite all the negatives, which are huge. They still voted for him. And that's why. The Democrats were denouncing people. They were basically doing everything they accused Donald Trump of being, but they put themselves on a high moral ground because in their minds, we could do whatever we want to do. We can circumvent. We could be hypocritical. We could do anything we want by any means necessary because Donald Trump's the devil. And that was their justification. Well, the people said, no, he isn't. And the Democratic Party got slapped and they got steamrolled. They got completely rejected. That election was a complete repudiation of the Democratic Party and the media for the role that they played in covering up Joe Biden's mental incapacities, and for, once again, turning Trump into a victim, which they did, and allowing his career to resuscitate and resurrect. That's who's to blame. Not Kamala Harris, not Joe Biden, not Donald Trump, and not the people who voted for Donald Trump. Be mad at your party, be mad at the media, and force both of them to look in the mirror, learn their lessons, and do their jobs. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 442. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.